Welcome to the Interviews Podcast. Welcome, Interisti, to episode 84 of the Interviews Podcast. We are here for the Oak Tree Takeover Edition. Probably one of the biggest events to happen during our lifetime as Interisti. So had to make sure that we covered it in depth and in detail with someone who has knowledge of the situation, and make sure we bring you guys up to speed. As always, I'm one half of your co-hosting duo, Alessandro Raffa, joined here by Johnny Paterno. Johnny, who else could we have brought in for this conversation, honestly?
Well, everyone else actually declined, so we were left with no choice but to bring on our good friend Nima. Thank you so much for hopping on, Nima. As always, like, you're just quick to be responsive, quick to be available, and we are greatly appreciative, of course.
Well, of course. I love your podcast. You know I do. And as I told you, I didn't have time, but I'll make time for you, even though you're weird and stupid. But you're my friend, so, you know, that's what we do to our friends, don't we? We do things we don't like. So essentially, we're family. That's what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, that's exactly.
We don't like each other, but we sacrifice our life for one another. So it's essentially, we're family then.
That is, I feel like that's a prerequisite to be an Interista anyway. So let's get into the craziness here. Let's just dive right in here. This week, Oak Tree Capital Management has officially taken over ownership of Inter from Suning. 99.6% ownership in the club. Is that correct, Nima?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because Lion Rock is no longer there. We have the official, Inter announced last night, I think it was. Inter released a statement saying basically that that Oak Tree now own 99.6% of the of the club, essentially.
So this is obviously, you know, an American fund has jumped in here and taken over the club, and that is obviously
Alessandro. I was going to tease Johnny about that you're owned by Inter's owned by Canadians now, so.
There's, you know, like a Brookfield or something like that. Yeah.
They took 62.9% control over Oak Tree in 2019. So yeah, this is Tejan Buchanan's club, and the rest of us are just living in it.
Yeah.
So no wonder they supported the purchase of Buchanan,
exactly,
because they knew they were taking over, and they were like, well, we might as well have some free marketing while we're at it.
Yeah, let's splurge on the Canadians. Well, next thing,
it's a Canadian club. It's a maple syrup FC now. Yeah.
And next thing you know, we're going to be linked to Jonathan David pretty soon. So
That's when I'll jump ship, actually.
Officially become a Bologna fan. This escalated. This happened quite fast, at least from the reports that we were getting. So I'm just going to really quickly get into a rough timeline of events, and then I'm going to hand it over to Nima for his thoughts here, because we had been hearing for weeks and months that the intention for Steven Zhang was always to refinance this thing, whether it be with Oak Tree or whether it be with another fund, PIMCO. There was discussions with them to come in and, you know, take over the loan and essentially allow Suning to continue to have control of the club for the next 3 years. Reports from Italy are coming out that everything is basically done. This is heading towards the refinance by May 20th. Next thing you know, Bloomberg, an American, an American news source came out and said that the PIMCO deal is at risk. Oak Tree is not trying to hand over to another fund. If Zhang is unable to repay, they're happy to take over the club and go from there. And within a couple days, you know, Steven releases a statement saying that there's some Oak Tree's, you know, being a little bit difficult to work with, and eventually this thing falls apart. And I don't think anyone really, I didn't see it coming at all. It just, you know, got sprung on us, and we'll talk about our reactions. But Nima, I wanted to ask you, how how and or why did this plan to refinance for Zhang completely fall through after weeks and months of hearing that, you know, it's going to get done, it's going to get over the line?
Well, not just that. We've been hearing for 3 years that, I remember last year after the Champions League final, he, you know, said, we're close to refinancing with Oaktree. You know, those were his words. And you have no reason to doubt people when they say that. I don't think he lied as such, but I do think that he, based on what has come out from various sources in Italy, we can't have to say they're alleged because we've not had them verified. But the more information comes out about the loan deal, the more I understand why the more I question what the hell did Steven actually read what he signed? Did people explain to him what was in the contracts? What was the idea? Because, for example, and one thing that is being alleged is that as part of the loan, Oaktree had a 20% sell-on fee of the club, meaning that within the 3 years, there was an implied agreement that Suning were going to sell the club, and Oaktree were not just going to get their loan back plus the interest, but they also had a 20% on the value of the future sale, which to me is insane. Then you have other things, other reports coming out saying, well, the contract was worded as such that if Oaktree could veto the loan being repaid if it was to be replaced with another loan, meaning Suning have to repay it fully themselves. It just, and they're not the only ones. There's a lot of reports stating very detailed. Again, these are not verified things, but so we can't say with too much certainty what they mean. But other than the fact that I think that the initial feeling that I had, and we all had back then, was that the Oaktree thing that they took out was a panic. They had an offer from BC Partners of 700 million euros to sell the club, and they didn't want to sell the club because from what I think, based on what he said since and back then, was that they knew that they were on the precipice of starting a winning trophy cycle, and they had already invested about 800 to 900 million euros, and they didn't want to lose out on having done all the hard work and have someone else just enjoy all the glory and the success. And also they thought that they could, you know, it was around that time the European Super League turned up and was guaranteeing everyone 300 million in cash. And so I think they were a little bit, they got distracted by everything that. And then he's had 3 years to handle this, and he's not handled it. It's that simple. I can't say I'm surprised, because we knew this was going to happen. We knew this was a distinct possibility. So it's not shocking from that aspect. What is shocking is based on the statements that he has made systematically these 3 years, he's been very unequivocal. And when you're that unequivocal about things and they spectacularly blow up in your face like that, you look like an idiot. You really do. You look stupid. Yep. And he's not been made to look stupid at all during these 8 years. That's what I find so astonishing. There's been stupid things that have happened at Inter, but he's never been made to look this stupid. And it just comes across as incredibly unprofessional, or if you want to be a bit more conspiracy theory, that maybe the whole purpose was that they actually thought that they could, you know, that they could, they would have sold the club by now, or that they would have a buyer in place by now, and that they never intended on repaying the loan, but actually wanted to sell the club as a whole, albeit take a small hit as a result of it, because obviously he signed a contract that 400 million would have gone to the debt to Oaktree, because that's how much they were owed as part of the loan. And if the 20% is true, well, then that's another 20% off the price that goes. So he would have taken a hit regardless. So, you know, it's either that or the fact that he genuinely thought that he could refinance, but he was unable to do so, and so just did what Marotta did during the whole Skriniar thing and lied to keep up appearances so as to not destabilize the entire club.
I'm really curious about the journalism side of this. Like, how was the reporting from the Italian media so confident detailed that this was gonna, go through? And then, you know, from the reports that we're seeing now, it doesn't seem like it was ever really that close. Like, how was there such a?
It depends on who you ask. I think it depends on who you ask. You have to remember one thing: there is a vested interest here for PIMCO to make it sound like it was never close. Because otherwise they also look like idiots, to be honest with you. So there is a vested interest for them to make it sure. No, nothing was close. These things take time. We weren't like, so I take most of these things with a big pinch of salt. I don't think that the reporting side of it, without having spoken to any of the reporters, but I do know that, I mean, at some point when a club official tells you something off the record and says, you can publish this, you usually need to verify it independently. Otherwise, you're not doing journalism. You're doing PR consultancy, right?
Propaganda,
so
yeah.
So I hope that they verify their reports independently via, obviously, Oak Tree and these other people weren't ever going to tell them. But there are buffers they can use, and there are other people who are intermediaries that can tell them things. Off the record, of course, without risking their own, revealing sources. So, that's where we are. I think that my personal perspective is this, that I think the middle ground a little bit here. I do think that PIMCO was close. I think PIMCO were very, very eager because they saw the same investment opportunity that Oak Tree did. So I think that was actually close. But I think that they were not maybe privy to what Steven had actually signed with Oak Tree. And when they realized what he'd actually signed, I think they were like, oh shit, we're out of here. Because there was nothing in it for them at that point. But I mean, this is all speculation. This is just my personal opinion, not reporting. I mean, but when I look at what happened with why I think this... Look, the fact of the matter is, that Suning, I mean, after 2017, 2018, we don't need to go to the politics of it, but what happened geopolitically was that for the first time since ever, the West decided to go into a trade war with China. And as a result of that, China decided to turn off the faucet on all capital leaving the country that wasn't essential part of what they demean or what they consider as essential businesses, right? So their investments in tech, in factories, in production abroad, that's an essential business. Sports and entertainment is not. So they kind of already stopped that. And then the pandemic came. And the pandemic hit hardest retail and real estate. That's two businesses.
Which is Suning's. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they do. So
that's
they got
what they
wiped
do.
Out. Yeah, they got wiped out. And so that's not their fault. That's just things that happened to them. So what they were trying to do was to kind of, mitigate this disaster. And at the same time, again, they you could tell that they were really invested in Inter. They really enjoyed that investment. It was a prestige of owning Inter, a Chinese company owning Inter, of them being the first non-Italian owner of Inter, or non-European owner of Inter, that they kind of, they felt a responsibility. It's a family, it's a family business like the Morattis are, So they took their ownership of Inter was different and they really cared. You can tell that they cared. They really wanted to do things. But as everything more and more weird, stiff things happened in the world and they had to, Chinese Super League doesn't exist anymore. Jiangsu Suning, they pulled the plug on that investment. The year they won the league, they just pulled the plug on it because they couldn't finance that anymore because everything changed, right?
Yep.
So, but they also knew that they could not do that at Inter. They could not have Inter default, right? So I think when people panic, they tend to maybe not always make the best decisions for themselves financially. I still think that the best thing for Inter, and I'm strictly speaking Inter, was for them to not sell to BC Partners. And why I what I base on that is what the guy who owns the I think it was the CEO of BC Partners came out and said that he wants to run Inter via the Atalanta model. Now, I do not want the Atalanta model anywhere near Inter.
Complete misunderstanding of the club's ambitions and what they should be fighting for.
I don't
for.
Want the Atalanta model anywhere near Inter. What I wanted is exactly what we've seen since 2021, what Marotta has done. Basically, to work hard with a limited budget, with the right coach, bring the right players of various ages, but stay within financial sustainability and build something long term, and which is good both now and long term. And that's what Inter are doing. That's and Oaktree, what they have done. I mean, we're 3 years into Oaktree. Oaktree have been at Inter since 2021. And one of the first things they did when they gave the loan, one of the terms of that loan, the condition, was that the club needs to come into line with what they consider to be financial sustainability, right? And Inter has done that for 3 years. So, and we know that they've done that because we remember what happened the first summer. We know what happened the second summer. And the third summer was the first summer where we could end on a plus minus zero, and we still turned a profit because Marotta is that good at his job. And we've since then, and for these last 3-4 years, Inter have won 7 trophies. So, once Suning took, we're overseeing that, putting Marotta and Ausilio in charge of that. And basically we're like a CEO where they hired the right people to do the right jobs and gave them a clear budget. I think Inter have been very good. Now it remains to be seen what Oaktree's plans are. I mean, I've got the statement here ahead of me.
We could hold off on that because we're going to get into we're going to get into all that. What I want to do today is do a quick, retrospective of Suning, and we'll give our reactions to their era of ownership, and then we'll get into how we feel about Oaktree. But before we do that, I want to get both of your reactions as fans for what just happened, for the transition of ownership from Suning to Oaktree, because you see it all over the timeline. It's either, the sky is falling or this is actually going to work out better for us. So I'll switch it over to Johnny here. Your gut reaction as a fan, now that we are essentially entering into a new era of ownership.
As a fan, the main thing that I was mostly concerned with is, are they going to keep the sporting management intact? To me, that was the most important thing. our friend Nazario always says that the best signing, and I think Nima says it too, but Nazario loves saying it in the chat, is the best signing that Suning did was bringing in Bebe Marotta. And I think it's extremely important to keep him, Ausilio, Bacin intact, because, you see how they're able to manage these difficult times and how they're able to still field a winning project with a restrictive budget. It's incredible. And I'm surprised, to be quite honest, and thankful, but also very surprised that no club from England, Spain, Germany, whatever, who has a budget, has tried to poach Marotta from us. What he can do with no money is insane. Imagine if you gave him all the money that you had available. So I was really nervous about that. All things seem to be pointing that won't be an issue, and we as fans are extremely hopeful that Marotta stays, and actually not only that, but gets an opportunity to be the president of the club, which would be massive if that does become a reality. A little nervous, just because although I'm not the biggest Suning fan, I think we kind of knew what to expect with them, and we kind of knew where things were potentially heading in some aspects, but now it's you don't know what to expect. And I know you said we're going to get into whatever what Oaktree has said. And I did see something from the head of their European opportunity strategy or whatever it's called that kind of seemed like a cut and paste statement that you would want to hear from, some type of investment firm. But it's a lot of unknown. That's kind of where I'm at. I just hope that we at least stay with who we have in place at the very least.
Nima, your reaction as a fan to the new ownership?
When Steven's statement, because for me, this thing happened on Saturday when Steven put out that statement, because it was a it was a declaration of defeat. That's what it was. And that's when I knew that they're going to lose the club. And I knew that. I mean, I was in Milan. I was in Brera. We just went to Zanetti's restaurant where my friend wanted to see Bottinero and he wanted to buy a signed armband by Zanetti, which he did. And we were just sitting in a bar further down the street, just ordered drinks. And then this broke. And my reaction was, that's just
the most Inter thing of all time.
And then second of all, my reaction was, no, fuck you. Sorry for swearing, but fuck you. I'm not going to let you shit on my day. I'm going to enjoy this weekend, and well, I'll deal with this on Tuesday when it happens. Like, stick a pin in it. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because it was just like,
you're going to end up speculating on so much unknown that you'll drive yourself crazy.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk to people, and I wanted to see what they'd heard, and I wanted to see what the vibe around the club was, and I wanted to understand more. So, but I knew when that statement came out, but that's it, that's over, it's done. And I was certain that they're going to go to court there's quite a bit of litigation here to be done. I still think that at the end of the day, they will settle out of court because let's remember that as part of this thing, Suning have to, or Oaktree have to pay Suning. It's not just if Suning default on the loan, well, there's also a payment that needs to be made to Suning to complete the purchase of the club as well. What I think they're arguing over is the price of how big that's going to be, that payment. Very, very simply put, the deal, from what I understand, it says that, okay, so it's the value of the club, who decides what the club is worth? Well, apparently, from what I've read and understood, it's Oaktree that solely decides they can appoint someone to value the club at their discretion, and that's the value that they're going to go with, and then you subtract the loan plus interest, which is $395, and then you remove debt, and then whatever's left over is what goes to Suning. And anyone with any kind of, you don't need to be a Nobel laureate in economics to understand that the lower the club is valued, the less Oaktree have to pay, and Oaktree have a vested interest for the club to be valued lower. And while Suning have a vested interest to make it as big, to make the valuation as big as possible. So I think that's what they're going to be, that's what the legality discussions are going to be about. The litigation is going to be around that. And I think
quick question on that. If it does get litigated and Suning has to sort of prove that the value is higher, could we see reports of potential offers that were made by, you know, other buyers to come in for Inter, where Suning can basically say, we had an offer for 800, 900 million, or even a billion, whatever it might be? Well, do you think that's down the pipe?
Unless they've signed NDAs. And if they can get the people who signed the NDAs to, you know, waiver those NDAs to use it in a court proceeding, then I think we should see that. But I don't think this is going to go that far. I honest to God think that they will, once this calms down, I think they will look at, they will decide to resolve this in an out-of-court settlement where nobody talks. They all sign NDAs. Nobody admits any problem, any wrongdoing, and Suning get a one-off payment, and then that's it. But this doesn't really concern Inter anymore, which I think is very important to underline. That's something between Suning and Oaktree. That doesn't concern Inter at all.
Yeah.
What does concern Inter is how Oaktree are going to manage the club. And the statement, there is a statement that they released when they took over. And there's just one sentence that I didn't like. And it's the one at the end that says, Oaktree is dedicated to achieve the greatest results for prosperity and long-term for Inter with an initial focus on operative and financial stability of the club and their stakeholders. I don't like that sentence at all. With an initial focus on the operative stability and financial stability of the club and their stakeholders. I don't like what that says, because if that to me suggests that their main focus is to service the debt. And I don't mean the bond. The bond is 450 million euros. We even had a statement today as we're recording this saying that the bond has not been affected at all by this. It's not being executed. That's going to still where it is, and it's still going to mature in, you know, unless anything else changes between now and February 2027 or January 2027. Because the interest rate of that bond is lower than current interest rates are. So nobody wants to go near that. Or at least Oaktree don't want to. Or Inter don't want to. So nothing's going to impact that. And that's Inter's bond, not Oaktree or Suning's bond. What I mean by that is initial focus. What debt am I talking about? I'm talking about the running debts of the club, which three years ago was 400 million euros, and now is down to somewhere between 250 and 275, according to various reports in Italy, which means that they've gone down 125 million in the running debt of the club the last 3 years, which is very, very good, which also tells me that they feel that they're financially in a place where there's actually money coming into the club, and that revenue streams are increasing, and that they will be able to service it without doing what they did in the summer of 2021 when Hakimi and Lukaku were sold and Dzeko and Dumfries and Correa came in. So my only concern is how they're going to do that. Are they going to continue down the path that we've been on, which means we've gone through the difficult part, and this is kind of, we just need to manage it now, continue what we're doing, which I think is the best case scenario, meaning one player out, one player in, plus minus zero mercato, fantastic. Or if they're going to do what they did in 2021, I don't think they want to do that. I hope they don't want to do that. But this also has a couple of implications, in my opinion, and one of which I know we're going to talk about because we got a question about that. But about the contract of Lautaro's contract, so I'm not going to go into that. But that's the negative side from my perspective. The positive side is, and I think there is a positive side to this, two things. Number one, Brookfield or who own Oaktree and Oaktree, they're East Coast U.S. hedge fund bankers, right? They know, I'm sure of it, without having verified it, that they are familiar with, if not on first name basis with, then they have people who are first name basis with, on a first name basis with, Elliott/Redbird. That's good because Inter and Milan need to be on the same page when it comes to the stadium. Redbird were never on the same page with
Sooner.
They just weren't. That means that problem has been resolved, and Inter and Milan, once everything is settled and a new board has assumed control and a president has come and blah, 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 they will work on that because, again, Oaktree are ruthless, hardcore capitalists, and they're there to raise the value of the club. And anyone with an IQ understands that if you have prime real estate, newly built real estate, a stadium, that elevates the value of the club, right? So that's a good thing. And the second thing that I think is very, very good, and that's already started to happen, is the monetization of the brand and the sales department, essentially, of sponsorships and stuff like that, as sponsorships, well, basically all monetization of the brand Inter. Oaktree's portfolio is, if I'm not mistaken, about 10 to 20 times the size of Elliott. Okay, they are ginormous. They have enormous contacts in all forms, in all areas of business, which means that they can use that to increase Inter's revenue stream from sponsorships, which I think is good. I think one thing they will do as a part of that is get their own guys into the marketing, into the sales department, essentially, into the corporate part side of Inter, to professionalize that even more and to bring more revenue in. I think that's incredibly positive.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So before we get into the Oaktree side of this and what our expectations are moving forward, I want to quickly get your you know, both of your final grades on Suning as owners. Remember, you know, as far as the timeline is concerned, they come in 2016. This is the, you know, Mancini gets fired in the summer. De Boer comes in. There's the continuation of the banter era a little bit. Pioli comes in, gets us a little closer. Eventually, Spalletti gets us back into the Champions League. Marotta comes in, Conte comes in. We end up winning a Scudetto. Eventually get to a point where COVID hits us really hard. Lukaku's gone, Hakimi's gone, Conte's gone. Inzaghi comes in, and we get into this, you know, profit during the mercato, net zero during the mercato, still are able to win. So eventually their tenure ends with 7 titles, 3 Supercoppa, 2 Coppa Italia, and 2 Scudetti. Your final grade on Suning's ownership, Johnny, I'll kick it over to you. Oh, you're muted.
Appreciate that. Yep. I was trying not to be too harsh or too critical when I was looking into this and trying to come up with my grade. And I think I think this is a fair grade, but I gave it a B minus if I had to give it like an actual grade there, just because those first years were a little rough. The signings early on were rough. The managerial appointments were head scratchers, to say the least. And everything that happened after the first Scudetto, listen, I understand what happened with COVID. It affected really every club. But not every club had to do what we had to do in order to, you know, remain, I guess, successful. And it was a little disappointing. It was a little disappointing that we didn't get to continue on with some of those players, specifically Hakimi, who I think had we had him, you know, for the Champions League final against Man City, that's a win. That would have been a win. I think his pace would have been unreal. I actually now just imagined Onana kicking a ball deep and him just being able to sprint onto it and having nothing but acres of space, and it breaks my heart. But that's the only reason I give it a B minus. It's just those low things. It was amazing to get 7 titles out of that, like you said. 7 titles really in 8 years? That's pretty good numbers if you really break it down like that. I'm sure a lot of clubs in Serie A would take that and run with it, no problem, especially with the financial restrictions and stuff. I think that that would be a fair trade-off for them. And if you really look at it too, it's I think only Juve have more titles in that span. So and that's with us not really winning things in the first really 4 years of that. So it's truly a good thing. I think B minus is a fair grade.
I'm gonna go B plus just because.
Oh God!
They are the only reason is that I'm pretty down on their tenure, but the only reason that I have to give credit where credit is due, they're tied for the second most winningest ownership tenure in Inter history. So obviously the titles mean something; they matter, especially coming out of the banter era. But I also am of the mind that the true drivers of the success was, you know, Marotta and having a manager like Inzaghi and having a stable management team that were able to navigate under conditions that Suning had put them under. There was a period of time where, you know, they were investing in the team, but that eventually dried up. So, you know, at some point our ownership
investments were bad.
Yeah. I mean, at some point it shifted from being able to actually put money in the club to now you're putting handcuffs on your management team and your sporting side. And we still had success, but ultimately I don't think that that's all because of Suning. I think that that's because of the team that was in place. Nima, what grade would you give Suning here?
Nima, before you go, now, Alessandro, you sounded more negative than I did, and you gave him a higher grade.
Well, the trophies matter because it was too long of wallowing and having to see the Nagatomos on the field.
Whilst you guys were talking, I Googled what the percentage equivalent of these letter grades you guys do, because I don't have a clue.
Oh, okay.
there we go.
You know, I got them all now. And
get used to the American ownership, buddy.
Yeah, that's it. In Canada, Canada used the bottom half of the alphabet, I think. So we'll switch to that later.
No, but what I did was I do the Italian 1 to 10.
Okay.
And I gave them an 8, which is 80%, which is a B-, which is what you gave them.
Let's go.
And the reason I do that is quite simply because 8 years, 7 trophies, 2 European finals, in the middle of geopolitical chaos, in the middle of the first global pandemic in a century, of course they made lots of mistakes. But if you look at where Inter were, off the pitch, on the pitch, structurally, marketing-wise, facilities, it's night and day what they took and what they leave. It's night and day. The value of the club is 10 times, like almost, well, 50, has increased by 50% overall. I mean, they have professionalized Inter on and off the pitch in a way that was desperately needed. And they did so by slowly and surely building. They hired the mistakes they made in the beginning, I'm willing to forgive them, because when you come in, you're always going to make mistakes. The Gabigol, the Sabatini, all that nonsense.
Right? João Mário.
Yeah. But then they got Marotta, and Marotta is their greatest ever appointment. And the way that he has, for me, that's also part of ownership and leadership, is to appoint the right leaders next to you, the second in command, so that you don't end up with the Aurelio De Laurentiis situation. And Suning gave the keys to the car to Marotta, and that was the wisest decision. They gave him the financial parameters, and they gave him the keys to the car, to the sporting side. I would have given them higher, a 9, if they had hired someone on the business side who was just as good as Marotta on the sporting side. But other than that, you cannot say anything. They, in my opinion, they are the most consequential owners Inter have ever had. It is literally the bridge between archaic Inter, ancient Inter, and the modern Inter. And they bridged that, and they did it in just 8 years. And I think it's unbelievable what they've done. So 80%, B-, that's where I'm at with that.
Okay. And keeping in theme with the generally positive stuff about the Suning era, favorite moment of these past since 2016,
positive,
Johnny.
Positive moments.
Yeah, favorite moment of the Suning era.
Final second leg at being at San Siro and be, you know, Champions League. I mean, that entire day, just being in Milan, the tension in the air. Like, usually in a derby, you can feel excitement, but that day was just weird. Nobody was out. There was no fans. Like, everyone was on edge. The entire city was on edge. Everyone was like this. And then to win that, and the noise level at the Chelsea, it was unlike anything. I've been there like 20, 30 times. I haven't heard anything like that. It was just, the San Siro was aflame that night. And that feeling, like what they did, you're getting to the Champions League final, given the season we had, you know, nothing will beat that. Like, that is just...
When Lautaro jumped up towards the curva, like, yeah, chaos. The pictures that came out of that were incredible. Johnny, your favorite moment?
Nima, that's a great shout. I was thinking that too. And then I remembered the most important thing that happened was Inter signed Nicolò Barella. That is my favorite memory. That will go down in history as the greatest signing in Serie A history. He is everything this club needed, everything they will need. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed seeing him wear the captain's armband those few times.
Yeah, me too.
He is my favorite player. So to me, that's my favorite memory. And I remember freaking out because I thought Roma were going to steal him from us.
I remember that too.
And when we were finally able to get that over the finish line, probably the most happy I've been. I'm not even kidding. The second star, it was up there for me too. But yeah, honestly, the most happy I've been was after winning the treble, was signing Nicolò Barella. I'm not even
because
kidding.
Because that was a statement signing. I mean, that's the thing. Like, that was the summer when Inter bought Barella and Sensi and Lukaku and Alexis Sanchez. Like that summer,
you did not just throw Alexis Sanchez.
No, Alexis.
It was at the time. Part of the reason why that was a statement was because we were competing with other clubs for the player, not just like signing who we could. Like it was, it was a competition.
No, he was wanted by Barella, and we got him. And it was really important that we did get him. So,
yeah.
No, I agree with you. That was the first of the big signings that summer. So I get why you choose that. I really do.
You can't have this conversation without mentioning winning the 20th Scudetto against Milan in the derby, of course. A moment that I have to mention also, early on in the tenure, Vecino's goal against Lazio to send us back into the Champions League. I mean, that talk about like end of season drama and finally getting back to where the club that we grew up with belonged in the Champions League. I mean, that was a really important moment and really like the official announcement of Inter is now leaving the banter era and back to European relevance. So yeah, can't have the discussion without all of those moments. Biggest what the fuck moment of the Suning era. I'll go first. Losing Lukaku, Hakimi, and Conte in one summer after winning the Scudetto was heartbreaking, like completely and totally heartbreaking. Where I didn't, you know, Simone, we didn't know who Simone was. We didn't know that Simone was Simone at the time. You know, bringing in Dzeko, like it felt like we had made the sort of downgrade that Sabatini thought we made this year. It felt like that's the downgrade that we made that year. Obviously things played out differently, but for me that's my what the fuck moment. What about you, Johnny?
You know, I was probably gonna say the same thing, but just to change it up, for me, and you know, this might not be a popular one, but signing Joao Mario, I literally remember that Euro and everybody was talking about him coming out of that Euro, like, oh my gosh, Joao Mario. I watched him play. I did not see a single impressive thing in his game. I didn't see good decision making. I didn't see good passing, good pace. There was nothing that excited me. I think because he had some stats, like some good assists in that tournament. Like, I mean, number of assists. They weren't good passes. They just, you know, you just happen to have Cristiano Ronaldo with you, and that makes it a little bit easier when you can just fluff it into the box and he might just do something with it. I spending 45 million euros on a guy that I can't tell you a single thing that he does well is like, yeah, what the fuck?
For me,
what about you, Nemo?
That I can't get away from the Wanda Icardi mess that was like, but that's not Suning's fault, but that was the Suning era. I think Suning were mostly like wondering what the fuck themselves, if I'm perfectly honest. I think everybody was wondering what the fuck. When that whole thing with Perez, like when Spalletti stripped him of the armband.
And rightfully that, so.
And, yeah, absolutely. But that entire week was one big what the fuck. Like, that's the biggest what the fuck thing ever. And she was crying on that horrible show Tiki Taka on Mediaset. Marotta called in and
calling in. Do you understand how insane that is? How insane that is.
So that is the biggest what the fuck moment ever. Because like he's sitting in
the director of your club calling into a TV show to console the crying wife of one of your players. Unbelievable.
So that is for me the biggest WTF thing that ever happened in Suning era. But that was neither Marotta's fault. That wasn't Suning's fault. I think Marotta and Suning and everybody else were going, huh? Like they were also like the rest of us were going, what the fuck? But again, that goes to show like the level of professionalism that they have built up, that we went from that circus of her and him and Perisic being, you know, Brozovic and Perisic being pissed off and he being stripped of his captain's armband and, you know, Spalletti having to come out and say, look, I'm doing this for the credibility of the fans that love this club. I'm doing this for the credibility of myself as a coach, of the professional, like that entire thing, that is the biggest what the fuck ever. Like, nothing can ever be that because
I loved it, to be honest. I loved everything Spalletti said. I agreed with him. I'm like, yes, this is exactly what I want to hear from my manager. And of course, you know, I'm gonna side with the Croatians because everybody knows, you know, I'm part Croatian. So
I was mental. That to me is the biggest WTF moment. It's one of the. Yeah. It's probably the, and it's not the biggest WTF moment in Inter's history, but it's definitely one of the biggest in the last 10 years. Like it's right up there.
Yeah, in European football, period.
Yeah, it was
insane.
That night, right. And then Marotta calling in and she's crying, and then Moratti, she's crying to Moratti, and Moratti has to kind of mend fences between everyone, like some sort of, like consigliere, do you know what I mean? Like some sort of peacemaker. I mean, it's just, oh my God. There's so many. And Conte, like Moratti's villa as well. Again, Moratti, I just want everyone to understand, he sold the club a long time ago. He throughout all of this, he's had to like fix their shit so many times. Like they used his villa when Antonio Conte was throwing hissy fits. They had to have a peace talk at Moratti's villa. Like Moratti, like, this guy, like, will you just leave granddad alone? Like, do you know what I mean?
Like, I thought I left you guys with, you know, in a pretty good position. Like, how the fuck did we get here? He got the threatening fans too, like in it, ridiculous.
That was prior.
That was prior.
Yeah, he wrote that book about, what was it, 500 murderers from Argentina.
Yeah.
He's going to fly in.
Good luck, brother.
That's not the WTF. That's the cringiest moment.
Yeah. The captain.
Yeah, the captain of the
All team. Right. Let's wrap up Suning era with a game here. So this is going to be a blind ranking. I'm sure everyone knows how this goes. I'm going to read off names one by one, and you are going to put them into a ranking 1 through 5. These names have had various degrees of success and failure as acquisitions during the Suning era. And you're doing it blind. You don't know what name's going to come out of the hat next. So let's go ahead and start with Benjamin Pavard.
1 to 5.
1 through 5.
He's. I'm going to put him third.
Okay.
I think that's a safe spot. I think there's some other names that might come out later that I want to rank higher. So he's going to go third for me.
Okay.
So top five signings that they've done and Pavard.
It's not a top five signings.
So it's not a top five.
You're going to get you're just going to get five names and you have to somehow rank them without knowing which name is coming.
Without knowing what other names are coming. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to Pavard. Look, you guys know Pavard was my number one player that I wanted to replace Cunha. Like, to me, that was the dream signing. And I thought, in this economic climate, that's impossible. So I'm going to go second because I never thought in a million years that we were going to get Pavard. Like, I was jittery. Like, you know, Johnny, I was like, literally, like, is this actually happening? Like, am I actually getting Benjamin Pavard? Like, is this
especially the happening? Saga that took place, like, you know, right before that in the days leading up to it. And it was the most expensive acquisition in Italy that year, which I think there's some merit there. Okay, next name to come out of the hat here, Romelu Lukaku.
I'm gonna go with third, and I'll tell you why. Because if we discard the childish antics, and if we just look at the numbers, bought him for 75 million, sold him for 130, loaned him for 30, still a profit, scored important goals. Yes, he's a buffoon and a doofus and an oaf. And he was stopped. He blocked 3 important goals.
I was going to say, he's the reason why Arnautovic and Alexis were on the team this year.
Yeah.
Because he stalled the Mercato completely.
Yeah. But he was also so damn good under Conte and like winning that Scudetto and the way that he won. I can't give him, like, he's just such an important character for good and bad, if that makes sense. So I'm going to put him dead in the middle, 3.
Okay.
I'm so scared that you're gonna put somebody else on here that's gonna really make me. That's what I'm worried about.
Intentionally a little fucked up.
I know.
Here.
I know. I'm gonna stick with my gut and put him at 4.
Okay.
Because I still think you got. I don't know. I'm hoping you have 2 better people that I want to put in the top. That's all I'm hoping. So yeah, I'll put him at 4 for now.
Okay, so for Gianni, Pavard 3, Lukaku 4. For Nima, Pavard 2, Lukaku 3. Next name out of the hat, Alessandro Bastoni.
That's number two for me. He's number two.
He's a fan favorite.
Defensively, yep. You know my thoughts on him, but on the ball, there's nobody better in the center back position in Europe, in my opinion. People try to talk about Kvaratskhelia. Kvaratskhelia wishes he can do what Bastoni does with the ball.
Without a doubt. There is no discussion.
When I hear some of these Man City fans talk about him and try to hype him up and how he's perfect.
Go away.
If there's a center back that's literally built to be successful in Guardiola's system, it is Alessandro Bastoni, and he doesn't even need to be there. I'm so happy we have him. Yeah, he's number two for me.
I'm putting him at number one for the very simple reason. I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why I'm putting him for number one, because this is something that I've been thinking about for quite some time. Bastoni's signing, what he cost, because he cost 30, but then they sent a bunch of Atalanta players the other way, so he really did cost him somewhere around 12 million.
And he was a kid when he came here.
And he was a kid, yeah. And they loaned him out to Parma, they loaned him out elsewhere, and then Conte took him in and turned him into what he did. And defensively, there's been problems. But this season, he has taken massive strides defensively.
Yes.
And when I look at Inter's history, and I look at the captains that this club have had, the long-term institutional captains, and the characters they have been, the Zanettis, the Facchettis, the Bergomis, Alessandro Bastoni should be Inter's captain. He is captain material. I want him to be the captain moving into the future.
Shots fired to Lautaro Martinez.
No. For me, the captain of Inter is that guy. Leads by example, doesn't talk too much, is calm, is a gentleman. And Bastoni just ticks every box. And I think he's going to be at Inter longer than, all of them, to be honest.
Yeah. You want your captain to be the guy that doesn't wear the fitted suit at his wedding. Like, it's a little too big for him. And he looks like a clown.
I love their wedding. They were so adorable. You know how you go to these weddings and everything is perfect and everyone's so...
Yeah.
But his wedding was like... It was like a wedding I go to, one of your friends has,
Like in a backyard.
In the backyard. And they're singing Inter songs on the stage. And it's just... Yeah, I love
very
that.
Wholesome.
No, very wholesome. And his wife... is the only one, because Inter's captain, Paola Zanetti's wife, the Facchetti family, like Bergomi, he just fits the mold as becoming Mr. Inter for me, Bastoni.
Very unassuming, yeah.
And so for me, I'm going to put Bastoni number one, because I want him to be the captain, I really do. I think long term, in terms of stability, leadership, he's the guy, because I think he's going to be at Inter, he's going to end his career at Inter.
Yeah. I hope so. All right, next name out of the hat, Raja Nainggolan.
Oh,
this is an easy one.
This was a contender for WTF moment. That interview he did with Belgian media, where he's basically saying that the club had to sit down and do some sort of a schedule with him of which days he could go nightclubbing and which days he couldn't. Was one of the most insane shit.
Like Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
He's our Dennis Rodman.
And, the chain smoking and the chatting up girls whilst the camera's on him. And this guy, he wasn't a footballer in 21st century. He was a footballer from when I grew up in the 1980s. You know what I mean? So I have to go fifth just because he was finished, but he scored important goals. But he was also just crazy.
Johnny?
I just know this is a trap.
Is it?
I know you set a trap for me. And I can feel it. I can feel who's going to be the last name you mention. And then if I put Nainggolan... See, I only have one or five available. So yeah. If I put Nainggolan on five... You're going to give me this guy, and I'm going to lose my mind because he's going to be ranked as my number one son. I'm going to cancel. I know this is what you did to me.
Oh, my God.
I know it.
I will not. I will promise you the audio, name right? has been written down, and I will not change it.
I know this is.
This is just audio, right? So they can't see this. Yeah. the grin on Asandro's face while Danny was saying that was beyond evil. It was an admission of guilt. Like
it's like, do I just
so happy with himself right now?
Do I just
You have names like Lautaro, Barella. You have names like Gabigol, and Joao Mario left. You have no idea where it's
going. I know where it's going.
And the smile on your face just gave it up.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my god. He's enjoying it. Sandro is enjoying this.
This is a nightmare. I'm putting Nainggolan on 5, and I will take my. I will take my punishment.
Okay. All right. The last acquisition that we're going to talk about in rank, Gabriel Barbosa, Gabigol.
All right. He is the greatest Brazilian striker.
Second coming of Ronaldo, they claim.
Second coming of Ronaldo. Listen, he is the number one signing in the history of Suni. You know what? I'd rather have him
than Denzel Dumfries. Yeah.
Nima Nima got the order right. You went Bastoni, Pavard,
Lukaku,
Gabigol, and then
Nainggolan.
I think you got it. You nailed it.
Gabigol for me, as much as he was a shit, I think it's also got to do with the kind of player he is. Gabigol is a player who I think 10, 15 years ago would have played for the biggest clubs in the world. And would have, because he's a goal scorer, and he's had a very good.
He's
career.
Killed it since he left Inter. Yeah,
the guy scored a goal a game. Like in
he won the didn't he win the Copa Libertadores with the Flamengo?
He was like he's not a bidone. He just didn't suit European football. We didn't make too much of a loss on him. We got like 20-something million for him. It's just that in European football. He just didn't work at that moment in time. It's the same. I think it's a little bit, no similarities between them otherwise. But if you look at like, what's his name, Ciro Immobile, like he's a character who, I think, had he played 10-15 years ago, like 15 years earlier, he would have been at Inter, he would have been at Juve, he would have been at the biggest clubs. They had their peak during an era of football where number nines were something else. Well, first of all, it was a false nine for most of the decade. And second of all, they were players that needed to play next to someone. Do you know what I mean? So I think that, that guy actually has had a good career. Up until about a year ago.
And I also am of the belief that he could have had a good Inter career had there been space for him, and had he been given the time and maybe the right coach. Yeah. I think there is a player there. It just wasn't, we've seen a lot of players truly there that didn't.
Look, the guy has won 12, I think it's 12, 12 titles with Flamengo. He's won the Olympic gold for Brazil. He's won, I think, the Campeonato Paulista is like their
leading goal scorer.
And he's not a bidone. It's just that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but at Inter, I remember him scoring for Pioli away against Bologna to death with that Fanta kit we had, or Sprite kit we had.
Yeah.
Yeah. And luckily, the board fell in a way that now Johnny is forced to defend the Gabigol for the rest of his, the rest of his life. He has to look back positively at. The impact he's had since he was number one.
I did one goal
a tap in against like Bologna. Who'd he score against Bologna.
Yeah, like Nima said. Yeah, like listen, I wanted him not as much as I wanted Gabriel Jesus, who ended up going to Man City at that same time. But I did want him, and I thought that we could have had a special player. I really do think that if he was in Inzaghi system, not as a strike partner for. Lautaro, but I think if he was the guy instead of Arnautovic with this system, I think he would have been a super sub. Maybe of like the level of like a Julio Cruz, who's able to just come on and have an impact and score a goal in a timely one. He is a great finisher. There's no question about that. If you look at his numbers, him, Thuram, and Lautaro, I think that would have been a lethal trio. And I wouldn't have cared who the fourth guy was, whether it was Arnautovic or Sanchez. I would have been okay with that. And I'm not even... Listen, he's not the number one signing. I mean, I got forced into a box there, but I do think that he would have... Had he been given time, like you said, time and space, I think we could have seen that there was a player there.
Without a doubt. I mean, he scored 240 goals in his career so far. Like, you know, he's been. Like, the guy is a goal scorer. Like, that's why I just think the football has changed. And so these goal scorers have been very penalized as a result of that. The fucks in the box. But yeah, the guy could score goals. I mean, he fucking scored twice in the Copa. I remember that Copa Libertadores final. It was mental. He scored, you know, he scored twice. It was dramatic. And he literally turned that game on his head on his own. You know, so.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's better. Listen, if Sandro could have gone with Dumfries, and you'd be fucked. I'm sorry. Like, he should just be.
I would have given Huyan a dream moment
there. Oh, man.
I would have given him a dream moment. But so
deactivate.
I'm just looking at the clock here. I don't have a ton of time. I have like 15 minutes or so left. So let's shift over to talking about Oaktree and what is ahead for Inter. So we just spoke about the transition. We spoke about the Suning era and kind of gave that little retrospective. Now it's time to look ahead. So I want to get your guys' predictions for what this tenure could look like. Oof. And I'll start. The first prediction that we'll put out there is regarding the sale process for Inter. So here's the question. Johnny, we'll start with you. Will Inter be sold to new ownership within the next 2 years, or will Oaktree own it for longer than two?
Since we haven't heard like any like rumors or anything lined up, I do think that they are going to hold it. I think that they're going to try to stabilize it in terms of whatever debts remain to make it more appealing, and then hopefully have that new stadium plan like just set up, and that way it's more appealing to potential investors, and that way they could really maximize whatever profit they're going to get. Because if you have that squared away, you have the stadium. I mean, maybe not so much as a shovel in the ground, but you have already, you know, maybe agreements in place. I think that'll make it much easier to sell, and that way they can get whatever, let's say upwards of $1 billion at that point.
Which is what they want. It's exactly. I'm just going to echo everything Johnny said, because that's what I'm with this as well. I think they're going to stay for at least January 2027 until the bond is refinanced. I think from now until 20, it's a 3-year project. And I think that's the reason Marotta and them signed on. It's the new, regardless of it's Suning or Oaktree, this is a 3-year project. I don't see them going anywhere until 2027. I really don't. Because by then the debt will be gone and the bond issue will have been resolved. And by then building a new stadium must have begun. So I look at those three things. 2027 May, around 2027 earliest.
Okay, so it seems like, you know, there's an agreement that Oaktree is probably going to be around for a little while. So let's shift over to what they're looking to accomplish here, and I'll say that in the form of the mercato, because I think this is what everyone is really, really worried about. Within the next 3 years of their ownership, are we more likely to see? Let's just look at the summer mercatos. Are we more likely to see mercatos that end up net zero, or do we expect there to be some investment into the squad to help continue on the sporting side the success that we've seen in recent years? Johnny.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I would like to see some kind of investment, I don't think that's really going to happen, unfortunately. I think it's going to be ending, like you said, net zero type thing, one in, one out, whoever it may be. Hopefully it's none of the big guys that, you know, that are key members of this starting 11. Don't mind if it's Denzel Dumfries. But I think that like summer, you know, that we had hoped for of like a Bento coming in and, you know, Gudmundsson, I don't think maybe one of those two comes in, but I don't think we're going to be bringing all these players that we had hoped, you know, would be coming in. I don't think that's going to be the case, unfortunately.
Nima?
Just to build on what Johnny said, and I agree with everything he said, the revolution was last summer. That's the big clean out. That's when they did all that. Now it's tweaking. back to tweaking. They already got Zielinski and Taremi coming in. We know that Sensi, Klaassen, Sanchez, they're leaving. Some other players are leaving. I think we're talking tweaking here. That's where I am with this. I don't think there's going to be any major signings unless someone breaks the bank for Lautaro or Thuram. And that's the thing I wanted to get to.
What about Carboni?
I think he's good. So, because
let's say we get 30-35, yeah, I think that.
But you have to remember, Gianni, we're still in the settlement agreement with UEFA until another year.
Oh, God, I forgot about that.
So, so I don't expect anything. I think it's going to be plus minus zero, best case scenario, and I have no problems with plus minus zero. Honest to God, my fear is.
Do you have no problems with that because you believe we have the assets to be able to?
Yes,
you know.
Yes,
acquire.
Listen, look. I look at the players that they can cash in on. I look at Carboni. I look at Esposito. I look at Dumfries. I look at all these other players that they can buy and that they can sell, and I see somewhere up to 60-70 million coming in. And to be perfectly honest with you, if Lautaro, we need to talk about this. Lautaro needs to make a decision.
So here's the question. We offered up a little Q&A.
Yeah.
The question is, it seems like we're heading down that path.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about the Lautaro situation? Will he extend or will he refuse to lower his high demands? Personally, I'm a bit worried. That's from @Kriv three eyes.
My perspective is very simple. No Italian club can pay those wages. It's a simple, it's not neither Juve, Inter, or Milan can pay 10 million, double figure million net a year. Is then you forget about it. It's not going to happen. And Lautaro Martinez has to come to a point where he has to make a decision. Is he okay with living in Milan and making 8-9 million euros a year? Or, hello Manchester, hello Paris, hello Madrid, hello whatever.
Like, I'm getting really worried, not so much with how the negotiation is going to end up, but with more so the fan sentiment towards Lautaro, because I don't, like, we don't hear a word from Lautaro, but my God, his agent will not shut the fuck up. He will not shut the fuck up about... Yeah. And he, it's not even going to be like, reports coming out that Lauti is flirting with other clubs that are going to turn the fans on him. It's going to be this guy, this agent that just can't keep his mouth shut and is continuing to make Inter fans feel pessimistic about the demands. Like, it's not, I'm worried that it's heading towards a path where the fans are going to start turning on our captain, which is not a good thing.
Well, but that's Lautaro's fault. I'm sorry, but like at the end of the day, your agent is your employee. It's not harder than that. Like, I'm really sorry, but if it's that simple, if he at some point he has to understand that there won't no more water can be squeezed from this rock, and if you have to make a life choice, are you happy with 8 million, 9 million a year in Milan? Or if it's important for you to get 12 million net, then by all means, arrivederci, grazie per tutto, arrivederci, ci vediamo. Like, I'm sorry, but it's that simple. I'm not worried or stressed about this, because for me, it's very simple. No Italian club in this current climate can pay that money. And it's not an Inter thing. It's an Italian football thing. And if Lautaro Martinez values 12 that much money somewhere else, fine. Just remember, you're the captain at Inter. You ain't going to be the captain of shit at Man City or Real Madrid or PSG or wherever else you go. You're not going to be the captain of anything.
The Inter curse has been following everyone around.
Well, because what they don't... It's, I mean, I say it with, with tongue-in-cheek, Inter curse. But the reason these players do so well at Inter is that Inter signed them for specific roles that suit them. And then they go away because they chase the dollar sign, and they're just one of many. And the players, and they're not the main stars there. The main stars are Mbappe. The main stars are whoever, right? And then the team isn't going to adapt to them. And they're not, and they end up flopping. It's really that simple. And to me, Lautaro is just going to have to understand that. And if he doesn't, I have zero problems with him leaving the summer. because the most important thing in Inter is stability and calm. No more of this arguing, no more the captain being at odds with the club. I'm done with that. We've done.
Yeah. Well, his agent is saying today you were happy to see out the contract till 2026, and
well,
you know,
that's
we'll see how that goes. No, they'll capitalize on his value if it comes down to it.
Yeah, but the fact that he said that to me is just astonishing.
And it's three straight days that he's now giving comments to the media. Three straight days, and we're heading into like. Are you paying attention to what's going on with Inter right now? Like, are we really pressing this renewal issue where we're talking to the media every day, given that we just got new ownership? And now he's talking about we have to talk to the new ownership and see what their ambition is. And it's, you know, this guy is talking Lautaro into a corner that is not good. Johnny, what are your thoughts on how this is going to play out?
I mean, I really just agree with everything that Nima said. You know, like I'm kind of tired of these agents speaking on behalf of their players like this. And, you know, it's like you are trying to pit the fans against either you or the club. That's really what it comes down to. And either way, like there's going to be losers on either side. Whether we sell him, there's going to be people who are upset that we sold him. And then are we going to reinvest that into the club? And then, you know, all the speculation that, you know, and stuff that we see on Twitter, typically it's just all going to turn negative. I don't think any player is bigger than the club. As much as I support certain players, I care about Inter first. Players come and go, whether it be retirement, you know, some players spend their career there and I'm thrilled, you know, with, you know, what I saw with Zanetti and Materazzi, and I'm trying to think of other guys like were there for that in my lifetime that I got to see them play out their career there. So if Lautaro is only about the money, then yeah, go ahead and like cash in on him. I love him for everything he does. I think that he's been an incredible player and extremely important and vital this season in a lot of ways. The way he came out of the gates blazing with all the goals that he was scoring was awesome. I thought he was really going to eclipse 40 goals for the year in the league, but it is what it is with how that turned out. And you know what, man, like if you only care about making 10, 12 million net, whatever it may be, go, like Nima said, go to Real, go to City, no, go to wherever. And we'll find somebody else.
The club stability cannot be, at this point in time, is not up for discussion. Like it's very simple. The stability of Inter at this point, in the middle of a goddamn ownership change, it's irresponsible to go out. I mean, to be honest, I just read the interview that he said. He didn't say that he was going to run out the contract. He was talking about Hakimi and saying, look, he's got a contract up in 2026. He didn't say that.
Okay.
So just to be clear, he just said that, you know, he actually tried to walk a lot of this back. That's how I'm reading it. He's saying, look, he's become the MVP. He's, you know, he loves me, Inter. He loves the city of Milan. He wants to stay here, blah, blah, blah. I haven't spoken to any other team, any other club about his future, and I don't have the intention to do so. I'm only speaking to Inter about a possible renewal, even if Lautaro has... has 2 years left on his contract. If other teams in Europe likes him, yes, of course, it's logical that they like him, but I only speak with Inter. And then he's talked about the numbers. He says, and that's where he gets a little bit feisty. He says, I don't think the fans should know about the numbers being discussed. I will only talk with Inter, of course. I hear rumors of 12 million, 14 million, but again, I repeat, these questions are between Lautaro and the club.
Yeah, which is basically a shot at whoever's leaking the numbers. Yeah,
and then he's saying, furthermore, these are numbers that neither myself or Inter have discussed. Why should we talk about this? We should talk about his love for Inter, the fans, and they have to know that he loves the team and Milan. So, you know, he's walking it back a little bit, because I think he might have understood that right now is not the best time to do this, you know?
Yeah. All right. Let's shift gears real quick, because I'm running out of time here. With a question from a person, 1352, at a person, 1352. with Oak Tree coming in, is it safe to say bye to Goodmanson, since they probably won't put in any money? Thoughts, Johnny?
I mean, I think it really just will depend on what happens with Lautaro, I guess. You know, if they end up having to sell Lautaro, then I think that they take that money and they use it on Albert Goodmanson, and who knows, maybe Bento, and you still have money left over, you know, at that point. That's the way I would see it, as much as some people may. I don't think we hear so many crazy numbers about Xerxe. I don't see him being as cheap as that for 40 million. And I think if that were I think Bayern would be buyers first before we are, to be honest.
I would say that that his future is directly tied to Arnautovic, because Arnautovic is not going to be kept on the team as a fifth striker. So unless Arnautovic
that's more likely than anything, because
that he's on the team as the fifth.
Yeah, because they need five strikers.
Injuries happen. I
think it's very unlikely is that they're going to sign Xerxe to be the third or fourth striker. That ain't gonna happen. That's too much money. I think if they sell, I mean, if the only way Xerxe comes to Inter is if one of Thuram and Lautaro leave. That's how I see it.
You still think Goodmanson could come even if we don't sell Lautaro?
I think that if you are able to raise the 50, 60 million that we were talking about earlier from the project FTK, as Tony likes to, our good friend Tony Micheli is the CEO of, if that happens, I think, they can sort out some sort of Fratesi type deal, you know, where they loan with an option that becomes an obligation. But Xerxe, I got to be honest with you, the more I look at this Mercato, the more I look at Giuntoli at Juve, I think Bremer and Vlahovic are the ones I'm looking at. Because between those two, Giuntoli's counting on making somewhere around 150, 160 million euros. And if Inter's finances are crap, I don't even know what to refer to as Juve. Juve are dumpster fire that you can see from planet Jupiter. Like it's a ginormous dumpster fire. So they need to sell. If they sell Bremer for the 70, 80 million that they want, if they sell Vlahovic for the 70, 80 million that they want, I see them going after Calafiori. I see them going after Samardzic. I see them going after Xerxe and still have cash left over, if that makes sense. So that's what Giuntoli usually does. That's his style. That's the kind of operation he would do. And it would be a fantastic summer for them if they can do that, because I'm starting to feel that maybe Vlahovic is not good enough to be at Juve, to be honest with you.
Good enough to like lead them.
No, I don't. I'm having very second thoughts. I'm not.
He just won best striker.
Yeah. Yeah. No comment.
Yeah.
Like no comment.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the fact that Thuram and Sommer weren't even nominated in their category. I have no problems with Di Gregorio winning. I think he might have been the best.
I agree. Yeah.
But Sommer not even being nominated is just absurd.
But like, yeah, but Chesney and Karnesecki were like, okay.
I mean, yeah. No, and Thuram should have definitely been nominated for best striker.
I mean, he had more goals than Leao. Yeah. You know, like more, no problem
look
there.
Look at his goal contributions. Look at his. I mean, no.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, they just
want to understand. Yeah. But yeah, like yeah, I think they just
want
to
involve all the fan bases.
That's,
you know,
exactly
had so
what
many.
They want.
Yeah,
it's such a political decision that everyone.
It's
is
so
like,
stupid.
It's like last year when they didn't make Kvara the best under 23 player. They gave it to Fagioli, and then they made him the MVP instead of
Osimhen. And then Osimhen just best striker.
Yeah. He was the MVP, Osimhen. Like, he literally was. Kvara was the best under 23. There's no doubt about that. So, yeah.
Did Kim Min-jae win best defender?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
He must have because he was a bloody monster.
But
it's that's another thing, though. Like, I mean, Inter's Mercato, if they bring in Varane to shore up the defense, if they feel that his health and knee can stand up to scrutiny, if they bring up Taremi and Zielinski, if they sell Dumfries and sign either a left or right wing back who can, you know, ideally I would have loved if that was Bellanova. That's fine with me. And then, you know, you need to bring in a couple of then you have money left over to, if you're going to keep Lautaro and you're going to keep Thuram, you still have a bit of money if you sell off some of these players to strengthen the midfield and the strike and in the attack, you know? because you'll have four attackers. We're talking about fourth, fifth striker. We're talking about sixth, seventh midfielder for Klaassen and Sensi. You know what I mean? Like, we're in a good place. For me, the most important thing is to keep this squad together. I think this is a squad that can go on a winning run. I really like the Zielinski signing. I really like the Taremi signing. I think they can offer something depth to this squad, which I don't think it has. I don't want to rock the boat too much. That's the main thing for me. If I could wish for something,
you shouldn't for a club that did this well this year.
Yeah. So I'm hoping everyone stays. I hope Lautaro even if he extends by 1 year, you know, which is a possibility. You don't have to do a 5-year contract. You can actually just say, look, why don't we kick the can down a few years? We'll sign a 2-year extension or a 1-year extension, bring his wages up to like 7-8, and then basically say, okay, in 2 years' time, if you want to leave, you can leave. Agree on a, do you know what I mean? Like,
just something that's short term that allows them to continue their relationship, and then
did with Osimhen to calm everyone down.
Yeah,
I'm okay with that.
All right, guys, this was awesome. We covered a lot. I feel like we were delivering some value here to the Interisti, who, you know, maybe didn't really understand what the situation is with Oaktree and so forth. So Nima, really appreciate you joining. Why don't you go ahead and plug your stuff?
Well, thank you.
Because you do a lot.
Yes, like quite a bit. Thank you. Well, first of all, thanks a lot for inviting me. I love you. I listen to your guys' show all the time. I love it. I love what you guys do. So please keep doing it. And no, I mean, we're going to be covering the Mercato as we always do on Sempre Inter 24/7. And we're going to be, and of course, the Italian Football Podcast, where our coverage of the Mercato and the Euro starts in a week. If people want to check that out, you know, we do a Monday show which is free for all. It's available on all podcast platforms. And if you want to get everything else, which is we do the second show and the Q&A pod, then you go on patreon.com/TIFP. $2.99 a month. That's it.
Plus VAT. Can't
forget of course, that. Yeah. Depending on where you live. which can differ. Let me tell you that. I had an Australian patron who was really pissed off because he had to pay like 40%. And I was like, sorry, dude. It's not,
you have to send him special episodes on the side.
Yeah, like, I'm sorry, dude, but it's not my fault. It's your government.
Yeah, you have to start covering the A-League just to keep him as a subscriber.
Exactly.
Johnny, anything you want to say before we go ahead and wrap this up?
Only thing I want to say is I did put out a tweet about the potential jerseys for Jersey Bird. So if that is something that you're interested in, I would need sizes and numbers. So far, I've gotten 3 people to respond to that.
How much are they?
It's going to depend on how many people sign up. That's why I want to find out for sure.
Yeah.
And
we'd love to get like at least 25 of you guys. That would be
perfect. Perfect. That would be the perfect number. Would be 25
people. I love those shirts. The design is outstanding.
I'm obsessed with them, and I even picked like the premium fabric. It's almost like like whatever the Adidas Climacool type, like their similar thing is.
Put me down for one.
The prices weren't that bad, to be quite honest. Like I was expecting them to be a lot more.
I'm not going to share my size on air.
Oh, don't worry, me neither. So I won't be doing that.
I'll DM you that shit and you take it to me. Yeah.
But it's I'm excited. I love what they came up with.
Are you the one who came up with the design?
I sent it to them what I would like them to, you know, potentially it's do, and then stunning. they sent that back to me like, hey, this is what we could do. And then I noticed there was no crest, so I was like, hey, like, do you think you could do this with like 2 stars instead of the 1? And they were like, oh, absolutely. And they did it, and I was like, oh, this is sick.
I want it. It's absolutely awesome. Stunning. So put me down for one. I just not at time because you know I've been traveling.
I appreciate it. But
definitely put me down for one because they are stunning. Absolutely.
Yep.
Stunning.
So reply to that tweet, or you can DM the Interviews Pod account and we'll go ahead and take care of that. All right, guys. In the words of the great Roberto Scarpini, Forza ragazzi, Forza ragazzi, Forza ragazzi.